Today we're thinking about protest, and I thought we might take just a minute to turn to someone near you. If it's possible to talk with someone that you don't know well, that's great, but you don't have to get up and move or anything. Turn to someone near you and just share about if there's ever a time that you participated in a protest or that you were moved by a protest happening or that you observed one. Take just a minute. If I could draw you back. Back in the 16th century, excuse me, Martin Luther was a German theologian. He was a priest who strongly disputed several teachings and practices of the Roman Catholic Church. This was in the 16th century. He didn't believe, for one thing, that God's favor could be purchased with money. And so, in October of 1517, Luther wrote to his bishop to protest the sale of indulgences. Now, it's unclear whether he intended to reform the church or whether he was simply offering a scholarly objection to the current church practice. And whether or not he actually nailed his 95 theses to the door at All Saints Church in Wittenberg, that's disputed historically too. But within a couple of months, Luther's 95 theses had spread throughout Europe. And since this is not a sermon about church history, I will cut to the chase. Today, we are all known by what he did, his protest. We are Protestants. And we've had some great opportunities lately to protest the values and the priorities that have been recently demonstrated in the White House. The crowd last night, for those of us who were at DFW Airport in Terminal B, the crowd was pretty incredible. We were, of course, protesting the detainment of those from Muslim countries who had already been granted entry into the United States. And a week ago, just last Saturday, it seems like longer ago, but it was just a week ago, that many of us put on our marching shoes and we headed to places like Washington, D.C. and Austin, as well as right here in Fort Worth, a great showing in Fort Worth, and Dallas and Denton. We even had a couple in Omaha, Nebraska. Josh Harmon's parents were there and posted on our church site. We protested with our feet, while other people protested on their knees in prayer that day, or they supported the marchers in other ways. We all did what we could to make our voices and our values known. And it was truly a remarkable experience to be joined as one voice with thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of strangers. And one way that happened as we marched was in chanting. You know, we heard chants like, "Women's rights are human rights! Women's rights are human rights!" People of all ages joined in these chants. Sometimes they were in the form of call and response. We'll practice it. "Show me what democracy looks like. This is what democracy... Show me what democracy looks like." That's right. Or there was one in Austin. "Fired up, ready to go. Fired up." That's good. That's good. Some chants involved different parts for men and women. I remember one where the women were chanting, "My rights, my body," and the men responded with, "Her rights, her body." You know, I think my all-time favorite, I don't know if I should say this one or not. Okay, I'm going to say it, was the one our Austin group started. We were inspired by a sign we read. We said, "We want a leader, not a crazy tweeter." We weren't sure that it would work. We practiced it first, and then it caught on, and then it was hard to stop. We kept hearing it reverberating, you know, far away. It really was a very empowering, important day. And sure, marchers got some pushback in public opinion. I'm sure you're familiar with that. Those who viewed the marches as divisive or as negatively focused. Some called the protesters whiny, sore losers. I heard more than once someone say, "We're all Americans. Now we have to come together and stop sniping at each other. Can't we all just get along?" And what those voices fail to understand is that protesting is not sniping. Protests play a very important role, not only in the history of our faith, but also in our civic life, our political life, economic, cultural life. Historically, protests have often inspired positive social change and the advancement of human rights. Protests encourage the development of engaged and informed citizens. Protests are a very important way that the people can influence the public narrative. It was Gandhi who said, "When the people lead, the leaders will follow." The act of protest is so important that it is guaranteed in the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. American citizens have the right to peaceably assemble and to petition for redress of grievances, which includes carrying signs, marching or sitting, speaking and chanting, or singing. Nothing is more effective in bringing people together than singing. Last Saturday, on our bus down to Austin, a few of us knew each other well, but the rest of the bus was filled with strangers. We didn't know them, and nobody knew each other in that big group. So we sort of nodded politely as we got on the bus. We might share a comment or two with people nearby. But we really started bonding when Lisa and I stood in the aisle and led a robust, spontaneous version of, "I am woman, hear me roar." We did all the verses, by the way. And then later, as we marched, the songs kept coming. Songs of personal agency, like, "This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine." And later, these songs kept recurring. Our little group started that song, and it spread quickly. Everyone knew the words. People of every age, women, men, children, black and white, and brown, marching and just singing our hearts out. In that moment, we were joined together as one. In fact, throughout history, there have been those who have squarely faced injustice and responded with a song. During the Civil Rights Movement, scores of black men and women were murdered by those who wanted to put African Americans in their place in this attempt to keep them afraid and disempowered and defeated. And often those murders were half-heartedly prosecuted, if at all. Their murderers often not convicted, or if they were convicted, they were given very lenient sentences. It was clear that the murder of a black person mattered less than the murder of a white person. It is, of course, a tragic reality that lingers still. But in the 1950s, activist Ella Baker, she was one of the unsung heroes of the civil rights movement. She confronted this injustice when she said, "We who believe in freedom are not going to rest until the killing of black mothers' sons is as important as the killing of white mothers' sons." And you know why I can always remember those words? Because Bernice Johnson Reagan, another passionate musician and advocate, she's the founder of the a cappella group Sweet Honey in the Rock, she set them to music. She wrote, "We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes, until the killing of black men, black mother's sons, is as important as the killing of white men, white mother's sons. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes." During the 50s and 60s, songs like this became rallying cries, strengthening the supporters of racial equality, both black and white, through the tumultuous years of the civil rights movement. Hundreds of nonviolent demonstrations were staged throughout the South, thousands of people arrested during the course of the movement. And as those arrested would sit separated in jail cells following a protest or a demonstration, it was common for one voice to ring out, and soon everyone from their separate jail cells would be singing, "Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Ain't gonna let no sheriff turn me around. Gonna keep on walking, keep on talking, marching up to freedom land." Can you imagine that happening? In the 1940s, the song "God Bless America" was immensely popular. It, of course, remains a beloved song. But in the 40s, Woody Guthrie didn't think it matched the reality that he saw around him. After all, the Great Depression was in full swing. People were out of work and going hungry. And Guthrie loved his country, and he wrote, "This land is your land, this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me." But Guthrie, with his passion for justice, he wasn't done with that. He had more to say. After all, he had experienced the Dust Bowl exodus of the 1930s. And the racism and the classism that followed immigrant workers and blue-collar workers as they searched desperately for work during the Great Depression. And so he went on in his song to raise the question, is this land really ours? Does the government really care about its citizens? The land is fruitful, and yet common folks are hungry. Even today, when we sing this song, we often don't include the verses of critical commentary of our society that Guthrie wrote, like this verse. "In the squares of the city, in the shadow of the steeple, near the relief office, I see my people. And some are grumbling, and some are wondering, if this land's still made for you and me." And almost 100 years later, people are still wondering that. A few decades after Guthrie, half a world away in South Africa in 1964, Nelson Mandela was unjustly convicted of treason and sabotage, and he was sentenced to life imprisonment. He spent most of his 27 years in prison doing hard labor. But even while he was imprisoned, Mandela's influence grew through song, through freedom songs. He and his unjust imprisonment became a symbol of the movement to end apartheid. So instead of just feeling despair in the face of crushing racial inequality, South Africans sang songs of protest, songs that brought people together in this passion for justice, that gave them hope, that sustained them through incredibly difficult times. They sang songs like, "We shall not give up the fight, we have only started, we have only started, we have only started. We shall not give up the fight, we have only started, we have only started, we have only started." And meanwhile, in the United States, Pete Seeger had devoted his life to writing and singing songs to uphold the inherent worth and dignity of every person. In the late 50s, Pete saw his country deeply divided over the war in Vietnam. And he wanted to write a song that would give voice to this passion for peace and justice, but also to point out the cycle of history and how difficult it is to break. And so he wrote, "Where have all the flowers gone? Long time passing,
Where have all the flowers gone? Long time ago. Where have all the flowers gone? Young girls have picked them, everyone. When will they ever learn? When will they ever learn?
And of course, in his song, the young girls who pick the flowers go to husbands, the husbands to soldiers, the soldiers to graveyards, and the graveyards turn to flowers, and the cycle begins again. In all of these contexts, protest music actually became a weapon. It was a tool with which to fight injustice. Because music ignites passion in the depths of souls. And nobody used music better to bring about social change than Pete Seeger. He was a humble man with this clear vision of the world that he wanted to see. And so he took the tools that he had and he wrote music that inspired passionate protest in the hearts of others. Songs like, if I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning, I'd hammer in the evening, all over this land. I'd hammer out danger, I'd hammer out warning, I'd hammer out love between my brothers and my sisters, all over this land. Pete Seeger, Woody Guthrie, Nelson Mandela, Bernice Johnson Reagan, Ella Baker, all of these people, and so many more, have understood the critical importance of protest. They understood that protests increase the viability of a cause. Protests demonstrate power, and they promote a sense of solidarity. Protests energize and empower participants. And it's through protest that relationships are often built. I mean, solo activism, it's usually not that effective. It's when we meet and we network and swap ideas that we're energized, that we build community. I have to tell you, last night at the airport, as we made our way through that crowd, I passed a Muslim woman in hijab, right? And our eyes met, and she had tears in her eyes, we both did, and she just mouthed to me, I had on my collar so she knew I was a minister, she just mouthed to me, thank you for being here. And there was another Muslim woman in hijab that simply held out her arms to Lisa as she passed her. And they hugged and kissed each other. It's this beautiful moment made possible by protest. It's when people are brought together that those kinds of moments are possible. The women's marches last week that were held literally all over the world were important. Ask anyone who attended one. Probably for the rest of our lives, we will remember exactly what that felt like. So let's keep it up. May we all be inspired to keep the spirit of protest alive when it is warranted, to keep it alive in our own ways. Let us never forget that silence is tacit approval. One of the chants at the airport last night was, "Silence is violence." This is not a time for silence. As long as there are acts of injustice, may we protest loud and clear, adding our voices to all of those who have gone before us. It has perhaps never been more important. We are marching in the light of God. 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 We are marching. Ooh, we are marching in the light of God. We are marching, marching, we are marching. Marching in the light of God. We are marching.
watching it.